This is Pete Feenstra for GetReadyToRock.com talking to Michael Caton, the boogeyman from hell. That's Hell, Michigan. It's a place that's been in the news lately, and it's been about minus 17 degrees, I believe, Michael.
Yeah, man, it got pretty cold a couple of nights there, man.
So what did that mean? You just went down to your basement in your studio and stayed indoors?
You know what, man? My studio is in the lower level of my house, but it gets kind of cold down there, man. There's no heat in there. The only heat is off the machines, you know, that recording machines and stuff. But it can get a little cold in there, but I try to warm it up, man.
Cool. So how far are you actually from Detroit, then?
You know, I can get to Detroit probably in an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's close enough for the blues. So
I can get to Detroit probably from here to drive to the airport. Detroit Metro Airport takes 50 minutes on a good day, so I'm not far from Detroit at all.
That's great. So do you consider that your kind of brand of boogie rock is influenced by the Detroit music scene at all?
Well, yeah, man. We just grew up with that sound. It's kind of a double kind of a sound. Of course, we had the Motown, you know?
Yeah.
We had that going on. Then we also had people like in the early days, like Mitch Ryder and Detroit Wheels.
And of course, you got Johnny B on the drums there. He used to play with them.
Yeah, that's right. Man, Johnny's on all the hits, man. Devil with a Blue Dress and Jenny Take a Ride, you know, CC Rider and all that stuff they did.
They also play with Bob Seger.
Detroit band.
Yeah.
They did the song Rock and Roll, the old Lou Reed song. You know, Jenny said when she was 5 years old.
Yeah, that's a good version. But he also played with Bob Seger, I believe, and Ronnie Montrose and people like that.
Yeah, Ronnie Montrose. I believe he's on Nils Lofgren's live album in Europe.
Wow. So how did you originally hook up with him?
Oh, man. I did a couple gigs, you know, back in the early days, opening up for Mitch Ryder.
Wow.
And I must have met him then.
Yeah.
And then a few years back, maybe 7 years ago, Ron Cook gave me a call. Ron Cook was the bass player in Detroit.
Right.
And he also played in the band Catfish.
Oh, yeah, I remember them, yeah.
Catfish Hodge, you know?
Yeah. Great stuff.
I think he might have even done a few road trips with Cactus, if I'm not mistaken. Not real sure about that one, but so Ron Cook, I had played with him with a guy. I met Ron through Scott Morgan.
Okay.
Sonic's Rendezvous band, you know.
Yeah.
Scott is another Detroit guy, and I played with Ron Cook in that band for a few years. And I'm on some of Scott's records. That actually, his stuff just came out in the UK, like a big box set.
Oh, really?
Career.
Wow.
Not sure what record label it's on, but Scott Morgan, if you punch it into Google or something, you should definitely check him out. I think I'm on about 6-7 cuts on that box set from the different eras.
So is that
Ron Cook gave me a call. He said, "Hey man, I want to put the old Detroit band back together."
Yeah. Right.
Minus, you know, Mitch Ryder, but with a different singer.
Yeah.
And Johnny B is going to be the drummer, and I want you to play guitar and. Ron Cook was going to be the bass player. And we just did some recording and stuff, made an album.
Oh.
The recording studio around Detroit here. And so Johnny B was a drummer, and, you know, I got friendly with him then. I got to know him a lot better then. And then I was coming on a tour and just happened to ask him, did he, you know, would he like to come touring with me? So he did.
Wow.
A few tours with me, and he's on two of my live albums.
Yeah.
On the Prowl.
Yeah.
And Bootleg Boogie Live. He's on that one.
Okay. Well, let's get up to date with your brand new album called Hard on the Boogie on Mystic Records. It's your first actual physical CD that you've put out for several years. You had a couple of albums out there which are digital downloads, but given the fact that kind of blues rock crowds tend to be a little bit older, or the demographics tend to, what was the thinking behind that?
just trying to keep up with the times. Because to tell you the truth, I mean, physical's going to go away sooner or later, you know?
But not till this generation finishes, though.
Yeah, well, we're getting close, though, aren't we?
Well, not that close.
Trying to stay alive long enough to see it through the... To the next kind of generation here. But, just trying to keep up with the times, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Experiment. And,
That's great. Let me throw a quote at you, a couple of quotes. Cub Cody, the guy that wrote about you quite a lot, he described your music as a raw, mean and spirited sound combining low-down blues and boogie with an amped-up approach. Is that how you see yourself?
Yeah, that was pretty good. I used to do gigs with Cub Cody, man. We'd be the, what you guys in England call the support band.
Yeah.
You know, we call it the opening band. But, yeah, we would open up for Cub, and I got pretty friendly with him. And, of course, he had that song, Smoking in the Boys' Room, you know. And,
yeah, it was a big one.
Way back in the 70s, and then Motley Crue, I think, redid it.
Wow.
But I got pretty friendly with Cub, and towards the end of his life, he lived pretty close to me. I could get to his house probably in 20 minutes from here. He lived even farther out in the woods. And, he was writing for, like, Goldmine Magazine and these other magazines as a music critic.
Yeah.
And so I was doing gigs with him, and I was just writing a thing right now to post up on Facebook about him, how he kind of got me going.
That's great.
He reviewed my first little cassette that I did on my own because nobody gave me a record deal. And I did this cassette, and he happened to review it in Goldmine Magazine.
Wow.
And that went all over the world. So and
that was the starting point, then?
That was the starting point, because he put my address in there, my mailing address, and put a note that I was selling these mail order. So all of a sudden, I started getting checks from all over the place and letters from people. And sometimes they just send a letter. How do I get you the money? So I'd write them back and tell him to send me a cashier's check. So I was sitting here at my kitchen table packaging these things, these cassettes, the Boogie All Over Your Head cassette, and mailing them all over the world, man. And I did that for, geez, a long time.
Was this after you came back from the West Coast? And the question I was going to ask you actually was, you were out on the West Coast for quite a while. Did you ever record when you were out there?
You know, I did. I made a record with a band called Back, the hell was her name? Back Pocket.
Right.
An album I played on. And interestingly enough, have you seen that movie about Sound City that Dave Grohl put out?
Oh, yeah.
I recorded there.
Ah.
At Sound City. This is probably like, 1976 maybe, 75. It was right, Fleetwood Mac was in there recording their first, you know, album with the girls on it and stuff.
Yeah.
I forget what it's called.
Rumors, maybe, or the one before that, Bare Trees, maybe.
Yeah, whatever. They were there recording, man. And sometimes we would, the guy that I was recording for kind of had a contact there, knew the, you know. I think Keith Olsen had something to do with it, too, that producer, engineer guy.
So when you were banging out the tape you were just talking about, was that when you'd moved back to the Midwest then, or to Michigan?
Yeah, kind of about, I don't know. I think I came back here in 77, maybe.
Okay.
And then, and that first record wasn't until about maybe 82 or 83. It's getting hard to remember that far back, but anyway, I kind of did it myself, and right at that time, like I said, we were doing gigs with Cub Cody, you know. And my brother's a drummer on that first record, he had come back from California, too. He was living there a lot longer than me, but I was just schlepping along out in Los Angeles, you know, just playing everything from top 40 bands where I had to wear a three-piece suit and ruffled sleeves.
That's hard to believe.
Lounges, you know.
Yeah.
But, girl singer, and then I was, I said, fuck that, man. I had to have a...
your own thing going.
Stuff anymore.
Yeah.
So I had this blues band, and play for Pass the Hat around someplace up and down Venice Beach, in California there, and up and down the coast, and sometimes downtown, you know, L.A. someplace, and we just make like maybe enough for $6-$8 a piece.
Yeah, yeah.
And
But it was fun.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
I know, you can't make a living that way. But anyway, you managed to put out your own albums, Boogie All Over Your Head and Proud to Be Loud, which kind of established you around the world a bit. But would you say that the 1992 album, Get on the Boogie Train, was your big break, really?
Yeah, you know what happened with that?
No.
I was still putting that out myself, and somehow...
Provo got a hold of you.
Oh, you know, John Houghton, or Houghton, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, for Kerrang! Magazine.
Right.
Wrote to me. Oh, no, he reviewed it somehow. Somehow it got to him. I didn't send it to him. Somehow it got to him. And he reviewed it in Kerrang! Magazine, and then...
And you hit a rock audience.
Contacted me.
Who did?
A guy named Simon Porter.
Okay.
No, wait a minute.
Richard Porter.
Messed up. Simon Porter's Status Quo's manager.
Okay.
At the moment.
Right.
I think he put out Proud to Be Loud.
Ah.
I'm getting mixed up. I'd have to go look
at
the magazines and stuff.
It's a while back, you know.
I got a call one day, and it was John Houghton told me I should call Simon Porter. That's what it was. After he'd already written about Proud to Be Loud, I think.
Right.
So somehow I got a hold of Simon Porter, and he goes, well, where are you playing Friday? And I just happened to be playing someplace. Oh, they had that other guy, Doc Holliday, on a record label.
Oh, yeah, the Southern Boogie guy, a Southern Rock guy, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Simon Porter was kind of running this record label that was out of France. I think it was called Link Records, and then in England, or the UK, it was called Loop Records.
Okay.
Simon Porter was running it in the UK. And somehow he says, well, where are you playing? Where's the nearest airport? And I said, I think, you know, like Detroit or Toledo. I was playing in Bowling Green, Ohio at Howard's Club H, where the Busting Up the Joint
album. Yeah, you did your live album there, yeah.
So, well, when's your next time playing there? I said, well, we'll be there Friday. This is like on a Monday or something, right? He was calling me. And so anyway, that Friday, I kind of forgot about it, you know, really. And we're playing in this dump, you know, and Howard's Club A is kind of a dump, you know, but a fun joint, a dump in a good way.
Yeah.
And I'm up there on stage sweating, playing, and I look out and I see these people that definitely weren't from Ohio. His wife, it was his wife I found out later, you know, big floor-length fur coat and...
I got it.
Photographers running around taking pictures of me and stuff, and some of those pictures actually did end up in Kerrang! Magazine that night. There's a picture of me standing out in the street with my guitar on and stuff. That was taken that night.
So that got...
Anyway, we take a break, and Simon Porter comes up and says, hey, I'm Simon Porter, you know, come check you out. And this French guy's with him, and this big, tall French guy, and they said, yeah, man, let's do a record deal. So I said, well, okay. So we did that record deal and then came out over there in England. And that's when I first went to England, whenever that was, back, you know, 86 or 7.
Yeah.
88, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
And, next thing I knew, I was on the cover of Kerrang! Magazine, so.
That was a big break. And how did you hook up with Provogue after that?
Ooh, man. Okay, so this record deal with Loop,
yeah,
you know, went for a while and fell through,
and
then I was back to nothing again.
Right.
You know, sloughing around the little honky-tonks around home here.
Yeah.
And somebody called me. There was a disc jockey from Manchester, England there. An old guy, and I can't remember his name. Been Chris something. He wrote to me and he said, hey man, you should get in touch with this record label because they put out this Dutch record label puts out your kind of style of music.
Yeah.
I go, yeah, what's that? And he tells me Provogue Records.
Yeah.
Because they had like Omar and the Howlers, and Dave Hull at the time.
Yeah.
So it took me, God, a few weeks. This is days before the internet.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Man, I'm calling international.
Yeah.
He didn't give me, how to contact him or anything.
All right.
So it took me, a couple of weeks of tracking the phone number down. So I finally got a hold of the president of Provoke Records, old Jan Vanderlinden.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, man, we'll stick out your stuff. And then the next thing I know, I'm on an 8-week tour of Europe, and the UK. So it kind of just went from there, and he stuck out a lot of my records, probably.
Well, that was some of your best stuff, of course, and you did Get on the Boogie Train, and Rip It Hard was another one, and you put out a lot of albums now, and I'm wondering, when it comes to writing your set list nowadays, when you, like for your forthcoming tour in the UK at the back end of January this year, 2014, how do you decide on which songs you're going to revisit, or are you just going to play the new stuff?
Well, you really hit one there, because it's really, really hard to do that, because I probably have, I was looking on iTunes the other day, just to see my set list, of all the tunes I might know.
Yeah.
And, geez, man, there's like 120, 150 tunes on there,
Yeah.
And I like a lot of them, and people come up and they request a tune, and I said, man, I haven't, played that song in 15 years.
Yeah, like Wild Ride, like I was saying the other week. That's a great one from way back.
Oh, man, you know what? That was on my list at rehearsals, but we never even got to it.
That's a shame.
We could learn it at a sound check or something before I get to your...
Well, that'd be great. But one of the reasons I mentioned it, apart from the fact that I love the song, is the fact that, like a lot of your albums, and on some particular songs, you seem to work real hard on your guitar tone. Is that the fact that you've got the time to do that in your own studio, as it were?
Yeah. Well, you know what, man? I've been working on my tone
a long time.
I mean, literally since I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
Hold on, Pete. See you, Michelle. Love you. Okay. My daughter's just taken off.
Okay.
Home. Where she lives.
Yeah, your tone.
I have worked on my tone. When we were kids, I remember I got that, some folks have seen me playing that 1958 Telecaster.
Yeah.
And usually that ends up somewhere on every one of my records since the beginning.
Wow.
It's actually on the cover of the Boogie All Over Your Head album.
Yeah.
And that was Bob Seger's guitar.
No, was it?
Yeah, he played it on. Some of those first hits of his, like Heavy Music and Persecution Smith and all that stuff. And I know the keyboard player that played on that stuff too. And I ran into him in a tavern here. He was playing like a happy hour, karaoke happy hour kind of thing.
So that's another Detroit link there, that's kind of...
Yeah.
I got to move this on, Michael. I've only got a limited amount of time here, but you've described your music as American music, which obviously it is. It's rock, boogie, blues, blues rock, whatever you want. Did you ever think about the irony of the fact that you and a lot of American artists like yourself, the music that you play is actually probably more well received in Europe than it is in the States?
Yeah, you think about that. You know what? I don't really have an answer for that. I just know that I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I can still come play, And it's kind of strange. I was just telling somebody the other day, I have certain gigs where some of these places I play are pretty small.
Yeah.
I might play a place. I'm on the Skegness Rock and Blues.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, yeah.
That's a decent size. I was on Sweden Rock this past June.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That was a good one.
I do bigger stuff like that, but then on the other hand, I'm not opposed to going into some tiny little club.
There's
100 people.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, in those clubs, I can make,
Yeah, you can make a living. It's good.
Well, in these small clubs in Europe, I will get paid probably 6 or 7 times more than I can make in an equal club here in my own neighborhood,
Yeah, and I think that applies to a lot of people over there too, and hence the fact they tour Europe. Yeah, it's an eye opener. But I wasn't just talking about the fact you play. I mean, there's always been the blues heritage in Europe anyway, but there also seems to be a very strong, you know, blues rock or rock blues kind of thing been going on for 30 years at least in Europe.
Yeah, you know, I appreciate that. I think it's just because it's kind of real music, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it reflects people's lives. A bit like some of your songs. I was going to ask you about, you know, albums like Bad Machine. You got song titles like The Pierce Tattooed and 20-something Boogie and Rock and Roll Whiskey, Blood and Guts and Americana McFomo. I mean, that's McMofo, I beg your pardon. So that's all kind of comments on everyday stuff you see around you, I guess.
Well, American McMofo.
I'll
tell you something. I was coming from somewhere one night. I know what I was doing. Some years back, I used to, just for some extra money, I'd teach guitar.
Great.
At a music shop, you know, a music store. And this wasn't that awful long ago, right around when that song came out, you know, probably
10 years ago, maybe.
It come out 2000 or something. Or
yeah.
Anyway, man, at the time I wasn't playing, you know, gigs were thin. I don't think I toured for a while, and I was teaching guitar, and this shop happened to go till night, you know, like 8 or 9 at night, and I was just leaving there, and I was starving to death, and I stopped in a McDonald's, you know.
Right.
And I was sitting there and eating my stuff, and I'm looking at these kids, you know, pierced tattooed kind of kids.
Got it,
know?
Yeah.
And they're just schlepping off, and I'm sitting there, and there was garbage all over, and it was dirty, and I'm the only one in there. And they're, you know, outside the back door smoking pot and stuff, and they're getting ready to close up, and they're just fucking off, you know. And
yeah, I got it.
Pissed me off. And then I'm looking at the walls, and it said McMuffins and Mc this and Mc that.
Yeah.
I was just sitting there. I said, ah, McMotherfucker, you know. And, and American slang is, mofo, you know. So I said, ah, McMofo. I said, hey, that'd be a cool title for a tune. So then I just started thinking about, you know, the song isn't anything about those kids or anything, you know.
Yeah. But how do you put your guitar parts together with an idea like that?
Oh, man, Pete, that's a $1 million question.
Okay.
Sometimes you just grab a guitar and start fiddling around.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get, it's the words, you try to piece music around some words or a rhythm to the lyrics, you know.
And it all kind of fits together. And anyway, we're all looking forward to the Hard on the Boogie album. Will people be able to buy that at gigs?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
If it gets pressed up quick enough.
Yeah, I think they're hoping to do that. So you got shows at the Boom Boom Club in Sutton, Beaverwood in Chislehurst, Skegness Rock and Blues Festival, of course. Talking Heads in Southampton, Robin 2 Birmingham, I think, and there's a place called the Patchett in Wales someplace, South Wales, I think.
Yeah.
And, is it just a UK stretch this time around?
No, man, we got a bunch more gigs, in Holland.
Oh, great.
Netherlands, Germany.
Great, man,
there's
great.
One in France, and our last 5 gigs of the tour are in Spain.
Wow, so it's quite extensive, that's great.
Matter of fact, I'll be in Barcelona on my birthday, man.
Well, that'll be one worth looking out for. This has been Pete Feenstra talking to the Boogeyman from Hell, Michigan, Mr. Michael Caton. It's been an absolute pleasure, Michael. Hope to see you there. Well, I will see you at the gigs, and I hope everybody else comes out and supports the tour.
Hey, Pete. I wanted to tell you that I appreciate your support. You've been promoting me since when?
Well, I guess it must have been 89 or 90 or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
It's a while back now.
Long time, brother.
Anyway, looking forward to it. Thanks for talking to me. This
All
is
right,
Pete Feenstra for GetReadyToRock.com talking to Michael Caton.